Literacy is dead. At least, that's what a lot of people are saying. We don't think it's true. We do, however, think literacy is about to look different. A lot different. For many people, the words "the end" signify either satisfaction or sorrow. What happens after the end? How do words become catalysts for progress and advancement?
Join us today for The Afterword, a conversation about the future of words. Hi, I'm Amy Boland, literacy specialist, writer, and college instructor.
And I'm Holland Webb, a full-time writer and editor. And this is The Afterword.
The Chinese word for crisis comes from two characters, fear and opportunity.
It's often through perspectives about life experiences that we learn and grow the most. Will challenges in our lives lead us to opportunity, or will fear keep us trapped?
You know, we're talking today about the impact that story has on perspective and disability. According to the United Nations, around 10% of the world's population, or 650 million people, live with disability. They are the world's largest minority.
And the global literacy rate for adults with disabilities is as low as 3%, a rate which falls to 1% for women with disabilities. But there's some effort to represent people with disabilities in literature and in visual media. What are the literary works out there that support and represent people with disabilities in ways that bring positive perspectives?
So today we're going to have a conversation about how disability is represented in literary works and why this is so important in giving voice to those who experience disability, and then how words can help move crisis into opportunity.
Today our guest panelists are Dr. Julia Wilkins, Anne Hartley, and Lucy Plyler.
Julia Wilkins is an associate professor of education at Presbyterian College in Clinton, South Carolina. She was a special education teacher in Buffalo and a special education professor at St. Cloud State University in Minnesota. She is the author of the book Group Activities to Include Students with Special Needs, as well as journal articles on the portrayal of characters in children's books and using children's books to broaden students' understanding of disabilities. Julia, we welcome you to The Afterword. I'd love for you to share a little bit about what you're working on at the moment.
Okay, thank you for having me. Right now, I'm reviewing children's books that feature characters with disabilities and developing guidelines that teachers can use in selecting books to use in read alouds for elementary age children.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Lucy Plyler, one of our other guests, is a social worker for the blind covering Cleveland County, North Carolina. She oversees two programs through the North Carolina Division of Services for the Blind and has been in this position since March of 2008. Lucy has been a social worker in various capacities for the last 30 years, including inpatient psychiatric care for children and adolescents, hospice, and case management for adults with disabilities. We're also joined by Hartley Plyler, Lucy's youngest daughter, who is a recent graduate of the Clemson Life Program, a post-secondary program for students with intellectual disabilities. In her second year at Clemson Life, Hartley was the Clemson women's basketball manager. This was by far one of the highlights of her year there. She was also inducted into the Sigma Kappa sorority, where she's gained many lifelong friends and sisters. Lucy, would you and Hartley please share a bit about what you're working on at the moment?
Sure. Hartley and her dad have started a donut business in the Clemson area. And this donut business actually started in 1972 in Forest City, North Carolina, when a businessman lost his vision due to diabetic retinopathy. And the state of North Carolina, the agency that I actually work for, as well as the Lions Club in his county, helped him set up this donut business. And it helped him to provide for himself and his family. So they thought that bringing Davis Donuts Clemson to this area would be a great idea because their specialty is an orange twist. And, you know, everything about Clemson is orange.
Go Tigers!
Yes, go Tigers. So just kind of getting off the ground right now. They've been working on this for about 6 months. And we're hoping that we will be going full-time by the end of February. That's the goal.
Wow, that's amazing. And what a great backstory to Davis Donuts and how they've come to Clemson. That's exciting. Hartley, anything else you want to share that you're doing at Clemson?
I'm selling donuts with my dad every weekend. And keeping busy with that.
She goes to every women's basketball game that's at home.
Sounds like you've got a really busy schedule then.
I do.
Well, we thank you all for taking time to be with us tonight. So I'm going to start in with some questions. And Julia, I'm going to direct this first question to you. And then maybe just also I'd love to hear Lucy and Hartley, some ideas from you as well. But Julia, what is the essential piece of information we need to understand and how disability is represented in literary works?
Okay, well, I've got most of my experience is with children's books, so I'll give you one example from an award-winning children's book. It's called My Friend Sue Hannah by Shayla Abdullah, and it was published in 2014. And it's told from the perspective of a girl who's friends with Sue Hannah, who has cerebral palsy. And this is how the book opens. She does not answer when I call her. She does not play tag or hopscotch with me. And she does not ride a bike. We have never had a play date. But for 1 hour each week, I get a chance to rock her in my arms and imagine that she is my special friend. So the book opens by describing everything that Sue Hannah can't do because she has cerebral palsy. And then it describes her friend rocking her in her arms. Well, first of all, that is not an age-appropriate activity because she's treating her like her baby. And that's one message that we need to get away from. Adults with disabilities don't want to be treated like children, and children with disabilities shouldn't be treated like babies. So characters with disabilities in children's books need to be portrayed as equal to other characters. And the book goes on to say, and although she cannot stand, walk, talk, or play, I love her all the same. So here, the author's aim is to teach children to be compassionate, but what's the message we're really getting from hearing that Sue Hannah deserves to be loved even though she can't stand, walk, talk, or play? So what the book's actually doing is reinforcing all of the negative stereotypes that people have about people with disabilities. It's telling us that Sue Hannah can't answer when she's called, play with her friends, ride a bike, stand, walk, or talk. But the friend who loves her despite all of these deficiencies then becomes the hero in the book. So what do we need to understand about how disability is represented in literary works? People with disabilities need to be portrayed like everyone else. And the way they're portrayed shouldn't reinforce a view of us and them and treating them with compassion because we pity them. Because you don't pity people you consider to be equal to you.
That's brilliant, Julia. Thank you so much for sharing that. Lucy or Hartley, would you think that there would be anything that you would add to that?
I would agree with Julia in that we do need to teach others to treat people with disabilities the same, because that's what they want. That's what they expect. They don't see themselves as different. They just want to be just like everybody else. And I think it's important for that message to be sent both in books and in movies.
Excellent.
Well, what about looking at it more from, I guess, the more positive perspective? What are some of the books and movies and plays, some of the stories that include a character with a disability that you have connected with?
Some of the books that she really has enjoyed and still enjoys is the Joni B. Jones, the Junie B. Jones series.
Yes, I love those.
Yeah, she does too. And I don't know that she has a disability. I don't think that's ever identified, but she was definitely singled out a lot. And I think that Hartley was able to identify with her because she was oftentimes singled out in the classroom, not only by her peers, but also by her teachers. She loved Diary of a Wimpy Kid, still enjoys those today. And again, I don't think he has a disability, but he, again, is singled out and kind of bullied, which she has also experienced. We read the book Wonder together and really liked that movie. And we watched the movie, and we just thought that was a very big impact on both of us. I identified with the mother so many things of what she had to go through with some of the feelings and experiences that she had to watch her son go through. I I've experienced that with Hartley and her disability and her the way that her peers treated her. We loved finding Dory, and I guess Dory had ADHD. and I think that Hartley was able to identify with that as well. Those are just a few of the ones that she connected with. And then on a personal, for me, one of the first movies that I connected with was Rain Man. And I specifically watched it again after it was a big hit, because the real Rain Man, his name is Kim Peek, and he has the same brain anomaly that Hartley has. And so I was very interested in finding out more about Kim Peek and how this movie came about, and how his family, you know, treated him and raised him. And the movie did have other types of disabilities that were included with what his disability was, is agenesis of the corpus callosum, which is no connection between the left and the right hemisphere of the brain. And that's what Hartley has. And at the time, we didn't know what her future would look like or what she would be able to do. But anyway, it was a great movie. And unfortunately, I think that Raymond was also portrayed as the victim, and he was institutionalized, and his brother, the hero, who was a self-absorbed, non-disabled person, saved the day and used him in a not-so-positive way. So that's one of the movies that I identified with also.
It's so interesting you mentioned Finding Dory. You may know that film recently became the highest grossing animated film in North America. And of course, not only does Dory have ADHD or something like that, but Nemo has the fin, you know, that's different. So it was interesting you mentioned that. Hartley, did you have a favorite book or movie you wanted to talk about?
I like Wonder a lot.
Wonder? I have never seen Wonder. I've never even heard of Wonder.
No.
Well, now we've just educated Holland. So yes. Thank you, Hartley.
Apparently, this is a great story.
No, this is good, because this is all part of educating and talking about the future of words, because there's probably a lot of people who have never delved into that part of our culture.
Can I go back and ask one other thing? I had not also heard of my friend Suhana. Who did you say was the author of that book?
Shayla Abdullah.
I was going to ask if she was the author of The Green Bicycle.
But she has written other books, but I think they...
I was just curious because I hadn't heard of that one either. I hadn't heard of Wonder. Okay, sorry to interrupt the question to Hartley.
Now, Hartley, tell me what connected you to the book and the movie Wonder.
He was bullied a lot whenever he was in school like I was, and had the same trouble that I did.
Okay. So do you feel like the movie was maybe positive in helping people understand people with disabilities?
Yes.
Okay. What did it do for you when you saw this positive experience? Like, the movie does end up pretty well, right?
Yes.
How did that make you feel watching this movie? Did that help you with dealing with some of the things you've had to deal with?
It did.
That's great.
I think also, Amy, that, you know, Hartley doesn't have a facial deformity, but there were some times that she recently had jaw surgery, so that has been corrected. But there were times that her friends, peers, people who didn't know her would stare, make comments. And so she was able to identify with some of the same circumstances, situations that he was experiencing in school. You know, people staring, people talking about her, those types of things. So I think that's really what connected her with him.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Julia, did you want to chime in with books or movies that you wanted to bring up that are positive representations of people with disabilities?
Well, like I said, all my examples are like children's books. I do have examples for some later on question, but otherwise I would just be children's books.
Well, right. Well, I was interested really because I think that when you were answering that question, Lucy, what you said was Ginny B. Jones, and well, she doesn't really have a disability. And then Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and well, he doesn't really have a disability either. I mean, they are books that portray people who are different, but portraying a character with a disability, I don't know if we've actually hit a book that does that, have we?
No, but we're going to get there.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think those books also kind of reinforce what you were talking about, Julia, is that children want to be equal to others. And having a book that doesn't necessarily single them out as different, like a Junie B. Jones or a Diary of a Wimpy Kid, is a positive. And so to have a connection where it's not, I have to be different in order to connect with this book, is a real positive. So I'm really glad that, Lucy, that you brought up those examples, that these are not just books that have children with disabilities in them.
Right, yeah. So, Julia, how do you select books or movies or board games for able-bodied kids that represent characters with disabilities well, or people with disabilities well?
Okay. Well, it's important to look at what's being overtly stated in the book, as well as the underlying messages. And I've already mentioned some of the underlying messages, which is that the characters shouldn't be portrayed as different because of their disability. The disability should be presented as just one aspect of who they are. In the same way, they may be Latino or male or an athlete or an artist, right? There needs to be more to the character than their disability. And children need to be interested in the character because of who they are across the many dimensions of their identities, as well as the activities they engage in the book. So they should be shown doing fun and exciting things. And students should be able to connect with the characters because they share similar interests, like playing basketball or painting, or be curious about the characters because there's something interesting about their lives that they're unfamiliar with, like the fact that they live in a different country. So unless the aim of the book is specifically to teach children about the characteristics of a disability, the fact that the character has a disability should just be seamlessly woven into the story. So I look for a book that has an interesting storyline, good illustrations, and where students can learn something about the character with a disability without the focus on the disability being the overriding theme in the book.
Lucy, did you want to add to that?
Well, I can't say that I specifically look for books or movies or even games geared towards Hartley. I just, whatever book's fun or that interests her. She actually got me to read Wonder. The Clint of my class was reading it at school, and she liked it so much that she wanted to read it together. And we did that over, I think, Christmas break. And I just loved it, and I couldn't wait for the movie to come out. And we went to see it together, and it was just very powerful.
Well, let me ask the question a little bit differently then. If there were books that you could have given to Hartley's classmates when she was in elementary school or middle school, what would those books have looked like?
Well, I probably would have suggested that the class read Wonder together, even though it hadn't been written when she was in elementary school. I think that there was a book that I had her teachers read, which was called ACC and Me, which helped them to understand what her disability was about and how she could learn something. And then the next day, it seemed as though she didn't know what she'd learned the day before. And that's just part of her learning. She was able to learn something and master it. And the next day, it was like she'd never learned it. So some of those teachers were a little bit more understanding and helpful, but some never really got it. I don't know if that answers your question, but one would definitely be a required reading for all children and people in the elementary grades, because I think it really does teach compassion.
Well, it really does answer the question. And I think, Julia, as I was also hearing you speak, a couple of the phrases that I'm hearing is some of the books and movies and things and the games that we choose We want them to be mirrors for ourselves, to be able to see a little bit into our a picture of ourself in this book or whatever literary work we're looking at. But we also want it to be a window to be able to look out at other children and to be able to see them a little bit differently. Julia, what are some ways that literary works support an accurate understanding of disability?
Well, one of the ways is obviously by accurately portraying the disability. So if you're not familiar with the disability and you don't know if the portrayal is accurate, you can read the information about the author on the flap, on the book flap, to see if they have firsthand experience of the disability. And very often with the good books, they do. They do have firsthand experience. And although I've emphasized avoiding books of negative portrayals, there's nothing wrong with showing a character with a disability struggling to function in the world, because the world isn't an accommodating place for people with disabilities. So showing how a person with a disability has to navigate the world contributes to an accurate understanding of living with a disability. So one example, this is a really good book, Emmanuel's Dream by Emmanuel Bessier-Bois. And it's a true story that you may have heard about. Emmanuel? It's a true story set in Ghana, and it shows Emmanuel, who's born with only one fully developed leg. He hops 2 miles to school and back every single day, and then you see all of the things that he's able to do, like riding a bike and playing soccer. And then you see him as an adult cycling around Ghana and bringing awareness about people with disabilities. So in this book, it highlights the struggles Emmanuel has to go through, but their struggles not just related to his disability, they're related to his mother getting sick and having to move 150 miles away to get a job in a city, and then people not wanting to hire him, and then his mother dying. And so it's a great example of a book where there's so much more to the story and the character than just the focus on his disability. And it's really like a real-life example of how having a disability doesn't have to be a barrier to accomplishing great things. Mm.
Mm-hmm. That's brilliant. Yeah. Lucy, you know, I would imagine, and Hartley, I would imagine there have been some barriers and some things that are difficult. So what would be some important things that you would want the listeners of our podcast to hear when they're thinking about books and movies?
Well, I think portraying them as who they really are, and they are more alike than different.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
They have more commonalities and more things that are the same than things that are different.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask this last question. How we portray characters in literary works, it impacts the perception of others. What message do you want people to hear as they take away these important words? How can we change that perception? Lucy, what would you want that perception to look like?
Oh, I think that we've come a long way. You know, when I think about, for example, the Hunchback of Notre Dame and how he was portrayed as a monster, I think oftentimes people with disabilities were portrayed as villains or monsters. Captain Hook is another example, and Peter Pan. That they are just regular, normal people trying to lead regular, normal lives. That's what I think needs to be portrayed. That's what they want to just be regular, typical, normal people and accepted. They don't mind talking about their disability, I would say, for the most part. They want to share their story. They want to share how they've had to adapt and how they've had to maybe do things differently than other people like them. I mean, different from them.
Mm.
That's fine.
That's wonderful. Hartley, what about you? What would you like people to know about you?
Probably just to accept me as like how I am.
I love that. I love that. What about you, Julia? What can literary works do to impact the perception of others?
Yeah, I think now a lot of the books that are written that include characters with disabilities, the aim is to educate. And often in trying to blatantly trying to change the way that people are thinking. The authors take this angle where they try to like evoke sympathy or pity. And so I think it's really important with fiction books that people look for books that portray individuals where disabilities are portrayed as equals. Okay. And with nonfiction books, you know, it's important to show realistic experiences of people's lives and then also to choose books where they're focused on things that people have accomplished as people with disabilities. So they can see that really just like positive depictions with real life examples.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
This is a fascinating conversation, and we're going to continue it on the next episode. If you are listening to us, don't forget to subscribe to the afterwardpodcast.com to find out what we're doing from week to week, and to like us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you next week on the next episode.